My name is Tom Nicholson. I'm an artist who lives in Melbourne, Australia. And I'm in Prato for the conference Archive Counter Archive, which has been co-organized by Monash University, which is the university which the art school I work at is part of, and the University of the Arts, London. And the subject of this conference is the relationship between contemporary art and the archive. One of my recent projects was a collaborative work entitled Lines Towards Another Century, which is a collaboration with a composer who lives in New York, whose name is Andrew Byrne. The collaboration is a work which has already had three manifestations, one in Melbourne 3 years ago, one in Bath in the United Kingdom last year, and a third and the most recent one, which was in Venice in the Parco delle Rimembranze at Santa Elena, where the work was performed by the Treviso-based contemporary music ensemble L'Arsenale. The text for the work is something which I've been collecting for the last 4 or 5 years. It's a list of instances of the creation of national boundaries. And I've been assembling this text over the last 3 or 4 years, I guess as a way of indirectly describing history. So using histories of boundary making as an indirect way to describe the events of the 20th century as a kind of mnemonic device, and which is also, of course, a kind of private archive, which is where I guess it has some relationship to the conference that I'm at. This text was used by Andrew Byrne to create an instruction-based score. So using a kind of system which became prominent in the 1960s with minimal musicians like Terry Riley, where the text was performed by a variety of performers, each responding to a particular set of instructions which they undertake independently.
Separating Angola and Congo, 15 March 1902, Great Britain, Italy, treaty between Great Britain, Italy and Ethiopia on the frontiers of the Sudan, Ethiopia and Eritrea, 15 March 1902, establishes a line later to separate Sudan and Ethiopia. 15 March 1902, Great Britain, Ethiopia, the line created by treaty between Britain, Italy, Ethiopia, on the frontiers of the Sudan, Ethiopia and Eritrea. 15 March 1902, later forms the Sudan-Ethiopia boundary.
I originally started to compose that list of boundaries in relation to another project. I was doing a project of dawn banner marches in different cities around Australia. And for those banner marches, the question was always, what route should I march on? Because in a normal demonstration, the route the banner march takes is determined by the meaning of the march. So you'll march from a university to a parliament, for example. But I wanted to create an arbitrary system which would determine a course through a particular city. And so I began collecting these instances of boundaries as a way to create lines that I would arbitrarily map onto the cities in which the marches would take place. And I would create accidental marching routes, if you like. But soon I began to treat this list as a work in its own right. And one of the things that I became interested in was its relationship to drawing, both in the basic sense that its constituent element is the line. I mean, it's a text work, but each line of text describes a line, literally, which has a place on a map and has a political history. In an indirect way, the work became conceived as a drawing. And in fact, the first time I gave that list a life on its own terms, as a work in its own right, was as a wall drawing. And I became interested in the way that it also existed in delayed relationship to the world. One of the things which I think characterizes drawing as an activity is that it's always in a delayed relationship to the world. You see something and then you make the marks on the paper, and that's what's interesting about it, that delay. And in some ways, boundaries have the same quality in the sense that they reflect the events of the 20th century, but always in delay. So there are virtually no boundaries made during the Second World War, and then in 1945 and 46 there are a whole lot of boundaries made. Similarly, at the end, after the Cold War is over, a whole lot of boundaries are made between former republics of the Soviet Union. So there's always a sense in which the boundary is in delay to the events which it describes, and that to me is an interesting connection to the nature of drawing. So part of my interest in that list was actually as a way to meditate upon an expanded idea of drawing, and of course a way to relate a history of colonialism, which is a huge part of the political landscape in Australia, this legacy of colonialism.
Later, the basis of the line between Rwanda and Uganda, both achieved independence in
It's an interesting question, the extent to which this work is a work about fear. Boundaries are very often fearful places. They often impose themselves on human lives in a very terrible way. When I recently remade that wall drawing of this list in Sydney just last week, someone came to me and said that she found the list very hopeful because all boundaries are made through agreement. So although they're often the outcomes of wars or invasion, there is always a sense in which the boundary is made by talking. And so for her, it was actually quite a hopeful catalogue from the 20th century because it's precisely the product of dialogue. I would probably tend to see it in more dystopic terms, particularly because the process of boundary making is so deeply connected to colonialism. And in fact, the first fifth of the list is almost entirely boundaries made between five or six countries, European countries, but of course not only in Europe, in Africa, South America and other countries, in other parts of the world. So I think it is, I'm not sure whether I would say it's a work about fear, but I think it's a work which catalogues very unequal distributions of power. It's a very interesting question whether or not this work manifests a return to a collective voice. In some ways, the nature of banner marching, which is the origins of this list, is an enactment of a collective will or a collective affiliation to an image. The musical performance was always conceived as being against coordination. So each musician is given specific instructions which they pursue independently of one another, a little bit like Terry Riley's In C. And so in a way, the musical work was an attempt to make a system which is constantly self-fragmenting. At the same time, there is a kind of redemptive quality in the reading of this list, because in a very basic way, to read it or to listen to it is to digest or ingest those histories. So to me, the work isn't clear on that question. It's poised between a dystopic, self-fragmenting system where the voices never cohere, where we never retain our collective voices, and on the other hand, a will to remember and a will to come to terms with a very terrible set of histories.
28 June 1919, France, Germany, Ottoman Empire, Bulgaria. 28 June 1919, Belgium, Germany. Belgium, Germany.
I think that question about what narratives hold and whether they hold continuities or coherent stories or whether they are simply a set of fragments which can never be reassembled is one of the points which the speakers at this conference are returning to. From my perspective in Australia, I think archives are interesting precisely because they are fragments and they don't ever cohere. And that's particularly pronounced in the case of the way in which Aboriginal objects and photos of Aboriginal people were collected by 19th century institutions, which is they were collected through a kind of mania for collecting these things, which was very much part of the process of invasion and an imperial project to assert ownership over those people. But it was also collecting that was done in a way which divorced objects and images from the narratives which would make sense of them. And so to visit collections in Australia or even collections in Europe of Aboriginal objects and images of Aboriginal people is to confront a whole lot of things which are unanchored. It's very difficult to locate where they're from, what their meaning is, and very often the museums themselves don't know. And so in a way what's interesting then is, well, if they don't function through their original context, if these objects don't function through the narratives which made them, how do they function? What meanings do they create? And in a way, that is where an imaginary encounter or engagement with the archive is important, because it's a way to activate those objects, to activate their latent meanings, but without necessarily relying on a straightforward process of digging up coherent stories from the archive. Rather, it's a matter of finding other meanings that reside in those objects, almost because of their liberation from the context which would make sense of them. One of the things that I'm interested in about archives, well, I'll rephrase that. One of the things that I'm always anxious about using archives is the extent to which to dive into the archive, which is always interesting, is a kind of reprieve from actually dealing with the present, or more specifically, a reprieve from addressing the future with all of its complications. And so I'm always anxious, I guess, to find a way to make what is found in the archive leak into the present, or to intrude into the present, to form an address towards the future, and not simply be a nostalgic longing or a kind of bookish, nerdish interest in something from the past. And I think one of the ways, I mean, many artists use many different kinds of strategies in dealing with that problem, but I think one of the ways in which it can be negotiated is through this idea of the imaginary, and that is not to conceive of the archival as important because facts reside there, but instead to try to form associations between things in the archive which act in an imaginary way, which inhabit a contemporary imaginary. And I think that that is the way in which normally the past inhabits the present, often in a very negative way through national mythologies, but in a funny way it also gives a cue to artists in the way in which one might make the archive exist in aggressive relationship towards the present or towards the future. There are lots of conservative politicians who agree with Nietzsche about forgetting being the way to have a happy future, and I'm sure it would make some people happy in Australia to do so, but in terms of a search for justice and also for a rich understanding of our present, I think the archive is a critical tool, both for artists and for citizens at large. Coming from Australia, the relationship to the past is very different. If I was growing up in Italy, then I could understand that I might take a position closer to Marinetti, because the past, in a cultural sense here, weighs on artists heavily, I think. In Australia, to forget or to choose not to engage with the past is very much the position of the right wing in Australia, whereas the left tends to occupy the position of trying to engage and come to terms with the past. So for me, the hope of moulding a better future, it is critical to engage with the archive and the past for that reason. But I think that these issues have different constellations in different countries, but that is how it is in Australia. Yeah.
Radio Papesse è un progetto di Ilaria Gadens, Carola Haupt e Cristiano Maggi.